Hey guys, Jason Agnew here. Now, you know my voice from Sunday Nights. We do the weekly Sunday Nights main event show, but I also do a show on Tuesday morning that reviews Monday Night Raw. I mean, we're forced into reviewing Monday Night Raw. Really, nobody wants to watch it anymore, but we do, and we eventually get to a review after myself and my friend and my co-host, Mark Andrada, chat about whatever the hell is going on in our lives. It's very much a slice of life podcast called The Midweek Markout, and you can get it each and every Tuesday morning if you sign up to be a patron. Patreon.com/SNME Radio. You'll get this podcast, an unedited version of our weekly recap show, plus a podcast each and every day, reviewing Dynamite, Rampage, SmackDown, NXT, all that wrestling has to offer. We cover it. Patreon.com/SNME Radio. It's only $1 a week. Sign up. But now, here's a sample of the Midweek Markout.
Hello.
Hello, you glutton for punishment, you.
Oh, I it's like sustenance to me.
My goodness. I mean, coming off a Sunday show, which, by the way, a lovely job on the Sunday show.
Oh, my. Now I'm blushing.
Well, it's really weird for me because, you know, I was typing these nice things and listening and saying these nice things. And, you know, I really prefer to do that behind people's backs, as I was saying to you. Say nice things behind people's backs and, you know, be a real shitty guy to their face. That's the honesty that Jason Agnew brings to things.
That is the Jason Agnew difference in broadcasting right there.
Because and probably the reason why I'm sitting here at 7 a.m. reviewing Raw while wearing a Snuggie, because it's extremely freezing here.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I'm in my spare room now where I've moved my recording and everything to because it's quieter. And the heat doesn't circulate in here as well as it does in the other places. So I might be opting for a Snuggie of some sort soon or just start lighting things on fire. I haven't decided yet.
Well, let's be real Canadian. So here it's minus 20 waking up this morning in Toronto. What is it in Regina there? It's Regina, right? Not Saskatoon?
Nope, Saskatoon.
Saskatoon, sorry. The other of the Saskatchewan places.
I can give you the Regina forecast if you want, but...
No, it's good. I know we're two morning radio guys here talking, so let's do time and temp.
Yeah, exactly. It's 6:10 now and minus 9 in Saskatoon. Oh, and this is a treat.
Rare.
Well, this is a treat because we are literally today snapping the 3-week cold snap. It is broken. It is done. Every day for the last 3 weeks, no word of a lie, has been at least minus 25 or colder. And we had a few, we had one minus 38 or 39 base temperature. Jeez. One day. It's been gross. So very happy to be, potentially warm today.
Yeah, that's nice for you guys. A lovely minus 9. You toss the cold weather. I can just imagine we have people listening all over the world, and there are people for sure. I know we have listeners in, you know, like California and Florida that must just listen to us and go, why do you live there?
What is wrong
with you guys?
What is this?
Stupid Canadians.
Why don't they just get out of their igloos and move somewhere warmer?
If you guys haven't figured it out yet, this is actually going up as the bonus episode on the main feed. So, hey, welcome to it. I'm Jason Agnew, a voice that you know for many years. And the new voice that you are now hearing on a weekly basis is across from me virtually. And that is the voice of Mike McGuire, who hosted his first episode of Sunday Night's Main Event this past Sunday. How was that for you, my friend?
Exciting, nerve-wracking, thrill ride full of terror and suspense. It was what a week to do it too. I mean,
like,
not much going on in wrestling, not much. It was between all the shows, everything here in North America, New Japan. I mean, even if you're not the most diehard Japanese wrestling follower, I think there's always a curiosity around Wrestle Kingdom time. It's the casual Japanese wrestling fans,
right?
Interesting time, and there were some big stories to come out of that as well. Like, it was it was nuts. I went back and watched both nights that were available by the time we did the show. And yeah, you're just watching all these guys just basically try and die in the ring. It was very, very intense. Of course, all the layoffs, the firings from WWE was the big story we found out.
Before you move on from New Japan, didn't Kenta just absolutely destroy himself?
Oh my God. So I watched this spot I watched the whole match. And because, you know, when you hear a story like that, you go back and you go, okay, I got to see this, right? And you're watching the match and you're waiting for it to happen. You're waiting for it to happen. And I had heard that it had come off jumping off a ladder and landing onto a garbage can. So when it first starts out, I'm watching and all of a sudden like a 6 foot like painter's ladder comes out in the ring. And I'm like, this can't be it. There's no way this is it. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, it wasn't it. And we got to the point where the giant Jeff Hardy ladder comes out. Right. And this was in the ring too. This was the really weird thing about it. It was a ladder that you had to assemble.
I heard about this. I haven't seen it, but I heard it took forever as well.
Yeah, you have to there's little wing nuts that you have to lock the bracing frame onto. So it's not like your typical A-frame ladder. It's almost like an X-frame ladder. And yeah, you had to assemble this thing just to jump off of it and face first into a garbage can. It was just bleh.
So there was that, a man destroying himself in the ring. And yeah, you mentioned all the craziness with releases. And on top of that, the news of Mickey James jumping into the Royal Rumble and the crossover happening between Impact, WWE. And now, I mean, if you're going to watch it, I guess it's a spoiler, but I don't care. The ROH Renegade Invasion of Impact that is coming as well.
Yeah, we didn't even get to talk about that because we just ran out of time. But what a huge, huge angle to come out of Impact and talk about timing. Like, for a company that historically has been just throwing stuff at the wall to see if it'll stick, all of a sudden to have this, maybe it was coincidence, maybe it was a plan. I don't know if it was planned out as much as people might think it would be, but to capitalize on any attention being given to them by the Mickey James announcement, and to have this ROH invasion happen at the same time, like.
But having said that, though, it's this stuff hasn't aired yet. So right, because this was at the taping. So is this going to air this week?
The first invasion happened at the pay per view.
Happened at the pay per view. Okay,
it was during the pay per view is when all those guys and Maria and Roxy showed up. So it was more like a follow-up in the tapings as to what are they doing? Why are they here? And so now we're getting that invasion angle, but it all started at the pay-per-view. So any eyes that were brought to Hard to Kill, they maximized it. The matches were solid. Mike Bailey, Speedball Mike Bailey, is now one of my new favorite things to watch. Like, he's so good. And he was in like the, I want to say he was in the pre-show match. Like, it was, you watch this guy and it's like, you should not be in the pre-show. You should be like semi-main event. And he will be within 6 months there probably, because he's just too good.
Did you watch it because of the Mickey James thing? Or are you still following that product and consistently watching it?
Not at all.
So it worked for you.
Yeah. I watch pay-per-views. Like, I'll check it out and I'll see if there's anything big happening, but I'm not following the weekly show. Yeah. And that's exactly what it was. I watched the entire show start to finish because of the Mickey news. And got treated to a nice show. So it was fun.
Well, you also got Tom Phillips, which I think is good. I've always been a fan of Tom Phillips. I mean, whatever he's going by now is real name, but taking over for commentary for Matt Stryker, because although I like Stryker when he started, I just feel like he's become a caricature of himself and is not great. So I like Phillips. I always thought he did a great job, but I never knew why they kind of let him go. He seemed cookie cutter to be the next Michael Cole.
I've got some great behind the scenes stories of Tom Phillips / Hannifin that maybe we'll get into some day, but classy.
Are we allowed
guy.
To? Oh, okay. Well,
yeah. No, it's a good story. It's a good story. Super classy guy. And then I was actually I caught an interview with him after his debut. Rene Paquette's podcast actually has him on there, and he was talking about how, you know, people thought this was this was like, you know, months in the making. And it turns out it was within like 3 weeks that this all happened. So it was pretty cool to see him come out so prepped and so ready to go. I mean, dude, crushed that show. Just amazing job. So, yeah, it was top to bottom, a great show, great hire with him, great angles with ROH. And again, talk about huge exposure. I don't know if the Texas Deathmatch thing went over with people as much as just the fact that Mickie James was, will she or won't she be the champion going into Rumble?
So. That was it. That was basically it. Wondering about that. Yeah. Who else do you think is going to fill up that that Rumble? Do you think? I mean, I'm guessing that Asuka's finally back here.
Got to be right. Now that we know that Sasha won't be in it. They're down another spot. They announced 19 total so far, right? And yeah, so you got Asuka in there. Do you think we get Trish?
I mean, she was supposed to appear at the two house shows.
Yeah.
But I'll say no, because I think she's currently working on Canada's Got Talent as the judge, right?
Right.
So I don't know. I don't know what the taping schedule is for that. I don't know if it's I don't know if it's in production as of yet or what have you, but I'm gonna guess no for Trish. But then again, who knows? I mean, she could be someone that they brought out. I kind of felt that she fell flat last time she was around, though.
That's just it. I think that it, because she had done the thing at Evolution, then she came out at the first Rumble, and then she came out at the second one, and it was kind of like,
Yeah. Same with Lita. There. Like, Lita was anticlimactic being announced at the end, and it was kind of like, okay, Lita's there, and now we're going to focus back on Charlotte jumping into this thing. It wasn't a big announcement. It's just a matter of they've overused those legends, so it no longer piques anyone's interest.
Well, and Meltzer brought up a great point when we were talking about this, and I never really thought about it this way, but you don't have as many giant legends in the women's division as you do the guys, obviously. And I never really thought of it that way, because I mean, to me, the WWE women, whether they've all been, you know, great or all revered by the fans, I mean, I thought there were more of them than what there are. But you really go back, I mean, when they're bringing out Jillian Hall, and when they're bringing out
Kelly.
Well, she's nice, but it was one of those things where, again, you're like, okay, this is interesting.
I'll bet Layla showing up when Michelle McCool's in the ring and do something there with them.
Oh yeah, they got to do. You know, I wish, you know, who'd be great to have back, and I don't think they will be, but it would be the Inspiration / Iconics. I think there's too much.
Oh, Peyton and Billy.
Yeah, because they're both an Impact too. But they're out. Well, they were out due to, I don't know if it was COVID or injury or something, but they were off the pay-per-view. So I don't know. I don't know who else you bring out. Yeah, that's a great point now. You know, I don't know. Do you call up Wendy Richter? See what she's doing?
that is the thing. I mean, there really is no older era. The oldest you get in WWE, not to say that you're going to bring out anyone in that era now anyway to be in the Rumble. They're just far too old. But like, the oldest one they have is Alundra Blaze / Medusa. They did that a couple years ago. She took a very gentle bump to get herself out of the Rumble. And then you get into that era that is, it's basically Trish and Lita of that other era. I'm sure Molly Holly will get the call and we'll see her. But other than that, I don't know where you go. How about this name? Actually, it won't happen. Well, never say never, right? It's wrestling,
right?
But Gail Kim would be quite the surprise that to be tossed in there. But if you heard, like, I sat across from Gail and did the live interview, and Gail is someone I've known for 20 something years, since being in like an Apocalypse Wrestling Federation ring with her to do a segment for one of my old TV shows, and she was just like, she actually said, I think, until Vince dies, I'm not going back. I don't care if it's Hall of Fame. I don't know what it is, but until he dies, I am not going.
So you're saying there's a chance?
Pretty much. In wrestling, there is. In wrestling, there is. I think Bret Hart proved that. The only person out there, if we get into this topic of, who will never go back, the only person that I can see being that stubborn is CM Punk. perhaps the one guy that would hold true to be that stubborn to never step back in a WWE ring.
I think the temptation was there. I think the temptation was there when he had the backstage deal. I know
he was banned.
You remember that show?
Yeah. That thing that Renee did on Fox.
Yeah, he was right around that time. He was bandying about the idea of going back in the ring. But at the same time, I think he realized, too, that that wasn't going to be the best decision for himself. And so, yeah, I think you're right. I don't think he would ever make that move. Sorry, I keep looking to the right, although people can't see this. In my collectibles room here, I literally have a collection of figures that cover all the eras of wrestling.
And oh, so yeah. By the way, it's insane, this room that you have going on.
Oh, you haven't even seen the insane side. This is just one side of the wall. Yeah, okay. but I'm looking at the collection here. And the only other name we haven't mentioned is One-Eye Tori. Tori. Not Tori Wilson, but Tori.
Tori from the Kane DX era, that Tori. Yeah, no one would remember her. I when I did a Turnbuckle Trivia last year, Tori was one of the ones I kept throwing in there because people just forget that she ever existed.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just it. I can't think of anybody else.
What would you say to them doing? I mean, if you want to take a dig at AEW, I mentioned this last week. Do you call Swole? Do you call Big Swole and just have her run in and do something?
No.
No, huh? No.
I think they honestly put a call out to Ember Moon before they call Big Swole.
They go with
someone they know versus anybody, you know, nothing against Big Swole, but we were talking about this on the main show as well as the aftercast from Battle of the Belts. As much as us wrestling fans have names that we know, like Big Swole and everybody else, there would be zero reaction to a Big Swole. So
you got to go back in WWE history for anyone. What about on the guy side? I mean, who shows up this year?
It's funny. A lot of treat. A lot of people are saying Jericho could be back for the Rumble. And I'm like,
oh my goodness.
I don't think so. He'd come out in an AEW shirt knowing him. But I don't even know who you'd bring back on the guy's side. Short of somebody amazing. You know, I mean, Kane might come back for the pop, right?
It's a lot of who cares.
There's Kane in the Rumble again. Yeah, Kane. Ryback? No Ryback.
Oh, no Ryback. There's some people that are just poison that you don't want back regardless.
Mojo Raleigh.
Oh, boy.
All right. Get hyped, stay hyped.
He's still hyped somewhere, I'm told.
Why not?
Don't know where. all right. Well, listen, you woke up super early to do this show with me today because I know it's 6-something your time, 6:25 a.m. your time, 7:25 a.m. my time. Tuesday morning cooked, so we might as well get into it. You watched this thing last night? You didn't get up this morning to watch it, right? Yeah.
No, I watched last night, so.
Live?
I watched the last half live and then went back and watched the first half because I was doing stuff. So. But, yeah.
All right. Well, it was Philadelphia. is where this thing took place in, and Corey immediately brought up our first Broad Street Bullies reference of the night. And to Corey's first reference, I wrote it down because to Corey's first reference, I was like, oh, as a 40-something-year-old guy, I remember knowing about the Broad Street Bullies.
Right.
It's early 70s, right, is where we're referencing here. Early 70s, I know about them. That's all I know.
That's about as far as I got too. I was like, oh,
right.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. I know that reference. Great. Yeah. That's the acknowledgement I got. And later in the show, the acknowledgement that reference would get from the audience. Lesnar comes to the ring. They cut to the back and Shelton and Cedric come up to Lashley and MVP, who are watching Lesnar on a TV sideways. Of course, they're like, the Hurt Business is back together. They're excited. Lashley tells them they're done and get lost. And by the way, if you notice this, you knew that they weren't together because they didn't have the Hurt Business shirts on. They had their own shirts on,
but their own shirts, because everybody got those gold foil shirts when Hurt Business first launched. But the only one that actually said the Hurt Business on the front was Lashley's.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So we go back to Lesnar in the ring. He's happy to be in Philly. He's interrupted by Lashley and MVP. And then Lashley says Lesnar has ducked him for 20 years. And Lesnar says he didn't know Lashley till they met at day one. And if he didn't know him, if he did know him, he would have already beat him. And they dress fancy. Which I kind of liked. I like this part too. Lashley calls Brock a comedian, and then Brock tells a knock-knock joke. Who's there? Bobby. Bobby who? Exactly. I loved all of this.
Yeah.
Even though it's a bit of comedy, it's like sarcastic, jaw-jacking at one another. I thought this segment was put together really well. Brock then calls Bobby Lashley a Brock Lesnar wannabe and leaves, which I liked all of this. And then the Hurt Business jumps Bobby Lashley. Bobby destroys both of them. And Brock doesn't turn around and come back and save his old tag partner from the Minnesota Stretching Crew, Shelton Benjamin. Is that the only one thinking that? Maybe.
Well, maybe, yeah. I mean, they did have that big hug at that one Rumble, so in 2020. So, yeah, that was, whatever. I mean, the thing I liked about that is that, once again, we're bringing death back into to wrestling storylines here, because what was the commentary? Who was it? Was it Corey Graves that says, somebody said, if looks could kill, Bobby would be looking at a dead Brock Lesnar right now. I was like, oh, that's a fun way to start off a show.
I'm okay with that. I'm much more okay with anything like that than the whole Goldberg thing that they
yeah,
did.
I'm gonna kill you.
I had no time for that stupid storyline. This is great though. I mean, when we reestablished the Sunday Night Show as Sunday Night's main event, it was the WrestleMania where Lashley returned to WWE. And I thought the whole reason in bringing this guy back was to put him up against Brock. It literally is a match that we've never seen, at least not to my knowledge, and a match that I've been looking forward to for, well, at least 4 years here, and if not before that, because people did want this match in MMA.
Oh, big time. Big. You remember all the chatter when they were both in MMA at the same time, and all the wrestling fans were just like, oh, what if these guys got together? Yeah. But, yeah.
So instead we get it here, and this is a great build, and I'm the only thing I'm a little disappointed about, and maybe we still will see it in future weeks, is I want that jaw-jacking between Paul Heyman and MVP just to go back and forth. This is like what I live for in wrestling, is two guys that are they're two of the best managers in the business right now going back and forth. I think will be incredible, and we still got some weeks to see that.
I hope they give it to us on TV. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something like that on Raw Talk as well, though. And it becomes one of those. Well, hold on. Don't get too upset, though, because it becomes one of those Daniel Bryan Miz moments, you know, where it swells up naturally. But I think it would be amazing on TV in a ring. But I don't know if they would dedicate that much time to just those two guys, because Brock's doing a lot of talking for himself right now. Which is not a bad thing, which you never thought you'd say about Brock Lesnar. I mean, you never say that 10 years ago, but here we are. So,
well, a part of it is that act became stale. And one of the things that we see for successful acts in pro wrestling is that you have to evolve your character. You have to evolve your act in order to remain fresh. And that is something that they've done with this Brock Lesnar character. So I think it's valid to have him talk. And to his credit, it actually works with what he's doing here. I think Lesnar's talking actually works better than Lashley's talking.
Oh, big time, big time. And nothing against Bobby Lashley, but if you put the two of them again in a room against each other, it's Brock 10-1. Bobby is still too much of a nice guy. I hate to say it.
I see what you mean, though. Yeah.
When he comes out and crushes and tosses guy around, he doesn't need to talk. He shouldn't be talking. It should be a case where MVP is talking. And I'm not saying that Bobby's a bad talker, but just it doesn't match up. It just doesn't match up. The angriest Bobby Lashley is still a pretty nice guy. So
it's almost a bit of a Tyson thing with his voice. Not overdone like Tyson, but you know, his voice is just so mild compared to his shape.
Well, he's articulate, he's well spoken, he's usually pretty well dressed. Like, I just look at him, I'm like, you're not a monster until you're Bobby Lashley that comes out in your gear and tosses a guy into the 49th row. So
All right. Well, we both agree this segment was pretty great to kick off the show. Then the rest of the show happened. It goes to a recap of Alpha Academy beating RK-Bro last week. Orton never got in the ring, so Riddle and Randy are in the back, and Randy was upset Riddle never tagged him in. They've got to defend the titles tonight against an Olympian named Chad Gable and a tree trunk named Otis. Randy then writes in marker, tag in Randy on Riddle's hands. And again, one of the moments I live for is as he's writing, Riddle compliments his handwriting, trying to crack him up. And he caught Randy off guard, and Randy just said, shut up, and tried to keep the straight face and keep going, which was great. They got a cheap pop at the end here for cheesesteaks. It's just very interesting to watch these vignettes. And you know, the cheesesteaks is what the writers gave them as they're out here, but the true moment was the you have nice handwriting, Randy, which was very funny.
I can't get enough. I can't get enough of these two. It is the modern day odd couple pairing, whatever you want to call it. So much fun. And just when he writes it on his hand, he's like, okay. Like, he's just looking at his hands afterwards. Like, this makes all the sense in the world. Of course, this is what it means to be a tag team wrestler. Remind yourself on your hands, write it down, tag in your partner. Okay, this is good.
This pairing has really grown on me as well. And I mean, Mark loves this pairing. He loves Riddle. He was his best on the mic for this year. And I think it's sad what we're about to talk about next, because odds are when a team loses a title, WWE loves to break them up. And that happened here, everybody. Shockingly, I would say. RK-Bro versus Alpha Academy is the match. It's for the titles on this week's show. Orton kicks Otis off the apron before giving Gable a superplex. Riddle tried taking out Otis on the outside, but Otis knocked him down, and Otis catches Orton with the slam for the pinfall. So Otis and Gable are your champs. So do you see them doing this again, and then RK-Bro grabbing the titles back? Or does this spell the end and the tailspin for these two now? Because they're not done. They're not done as a pairing, at least not in my mind. There's still a lot of this gimmick.
They can't be. Or they can be. Well, yeah. I mean, yes, in WWE, everything is possible when it comes to, what's that? Too much of a good thing? Not here. We're going to stop this as soon as we can. I hope that they do keep them together. I hope that but I'm not interested in I was thinking about that. I was like, I'm not interested in them chasing the titles as much as I am just interested in them being a unit.
Yeah.
Like, I prefer the team over the champions, if that makes sense. Like, I don't care if they have the belts or not, as long as they just keep interacting. That, to me, is the entertaining part of it, whether they have the titles or not. But I mean, the only reason to keep them together would be to chase the belts. So, I mean, who else do you put against Gable and Otis right now?
Well, I think everything's an issue. I mean, who else do you put against? The whole tag division is stale, but if you look at these two breaking up, I'm interested in what Riddle's path is. I'm not interested at all at Randy Orton, nor have I been in many, many years. The temptation, though, is to break them apart, do some sort of feud that will probably not go well and end up with Riddle getting destroyed and then Randy being elevated right back up to be a challenger for one of the titles again, which I'm not interested in. We've seen it so many times.
Or they do the right thing, because let's face it, Randy and Riddle have been getting along. It's very clear that Randy enjoys what he's doing with Riddle. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he wouldn't be done it this long. This would have been broken up a while ago. Is this the chance for Randy to put Riddle over? And if they do end up having a feud, you know, Riddle gets the win. Like, I could see venomous Randy Orton coming back, you know, and eviscerating Riddle to the point where he destroys him. Riddle comes back and all of a sudden he's serious for this match, and they have their Mania showdown. But That's a pretty big shift from RK-Bro, which everybody loves. So why not do it?
I agree with you. And I think it makes sense. You know who doesn't agree with you? I'm going to bet Vince McMahon, who continues to see the default of, we'll just go back to Orton, we'll just go back to Orton. And the perception of Riddle is that he's funny, but he's not money.
I don't know. I don't know if he is or not, though. I think you can always shift funny into money if you do it the right way. If you do it the right way.
I agree with you.
And again, I know Vince McMahon doesn't, but who knows? Every once in a while, you know, we've talked about this before. Every once in a while, that blind squirrel finds a nut. So we could get it.
Let's hope that blind squirrel is Riddle, because he is he's got a good combination of in-ring and he's also got a great personality. And maybe they're actually figuring out how to utilize him.
See, I'm still the optimist. I'm still hopeful.
You're the optimist.
I still want this to happen.
That's the pleasure of now hearing you on the Sundays as well. There's an optimistic point of view, which is nice, as opposed to my pessimism. All right, so we get into Damian Priest declaring himself for the Rumble in a pre-tape. Mentioned he did. Debuted there last year. Then they cut to Priest and the Street Profits. So it's Priest promo after Priest promo. The Street Profits then allude to the fact that there are two sides of Damian Priest. There's Damian and then there is Priest. So this just struck me. And I know they've done this double-sided thing for a few weeks now, but what hit me here is Damian is another word for the devil, and then Priest is on the other side of things, which is, of course, holy. Did you catch this before? Because it's been in front of my face so obvious, but I never figured it out till this promo.
Oh, I caught it instantly. And the fact that they made it this.
Oh, this is so obvious here.
This is two by four. Like, and this is the WWE style of again, Disney-fying everything, make it mass appeal, dumb it down to the level where you literally explain, my Damian side is evil. My priest side is, you know, calm and collected. Like, whatever. People are digging it, though. And I do enjoy the Damian Priest freak out, but it's,
he's Festus.
Yeah, exactly. Without the ringing bell.
Without the ringing the bell. He is Festus now, everybody. all right. Bianca Belair, she won the Rumble last year, but this year, after she wins the Triple Threat tonight, she'll go into Mania as champion. They would do promos with her, with Liv, and with Doudrop, which we will touch on a little later when we get to it. Holy shit. All right. There's a replay of Johnny Knoxville tossing Sami Zayn over the top rope on SmackDown to qualify for the Rumble match. Johnny Knoxville getting a lot of focus on this show, on SmackDown. On the Sunday show, you guys spent a lot of time talking about Johnny Knoxville.
I don't get this at all. I mean, I get it, but I don't. I don't remember what the buildup to Drew Carey being in that Rumble was, but I don't think it was. Yeah, I don't think it was nearly as big as what they're doing with Knoxville here. And I mean, at least if Johnny was still dying his hair. You know, you might buy it,
right?
It just looks so bad. Okay, this skinny old man is going to get in the Rumble, and what better way to do it? And what better message to send again to a company that's been having problems with fans attacking their own wrestlers right now than saying, hey, if you want to qualify for the Royal Rumble, all you have to do is throw a superstar over the top rope while they're in the ring and not looking.
He's going to eliminate someone. Who do you think is it? Sami Zayn that he eliminates?
It's got to be Sami.
Yeah,
it's got to be Sami. And I hate to say that, but I mean, that's, I think Sammy's very happy in being that guy. He's because he's still on TV. He's still ridiculously well known. And there's guys like you and me that love him no matter what. But I think that he gets that Sami Zayn moment, or Sami gets him out. But then somebody monstrously huge takes Sami out right afterwards.
Kane,
exactly.
It's always going to be Kane. All right. Priest and the Street Profits versus Dirty Dogs and Apollo. This match fills time, about 10 minutes. The heels get the win here when Ziggler pins Dawkins. So you know, in the food chain, Ziggler's low, Dawkins is lower.
Man, I still didn't get that. Like, are the Street Profits in trouble for something? Like, I don't get that story, but... I mean, I guess they're trying to keep Rude and Ziggler as a threat in the tag division. But again, a threat against who? Because they're not even in title contention right now. So,
I mean, we talk about Riddle and Orton breaking up. And I'm not suggesting this quite yet, but Montez is just a superstar waiting to happen. Like, this guy is that, from that frog splash to his promos... This guy is electric, and Dawkins is kind of holding him down.
You know what? The unit has been great from the start, entertaining, but there is a clear gap between the two. And I hate saying that because I do like the Street Profits, but yeah, Montez Ford is clearly getting a push after them focusing so much on that Frog Splash. You can see everybody in the back just loves it because they spend so much time focusing on it. But yeah, what do you do? Do you have Montez turn or do you have it go the other way around? I almost want to see Montez as a heel, though.
Either, I don't know about that. Either way, it's bad for Dawkins. But imagine this, going beyond, however they get out of the split happens, how much better would the intergender feud be if it was Montez and Bianca as your team that gets the rub from Miz and Maryse and goes over them? I would like to see Montez and Bianca interact. I think that there would be a certain magic of them together, like the exact opposite of Seth and Becky. Montez, actually, you know what? I mean, they are something.
That's where I thought you were kind of going. That's where I thought you'd be going, because that to me still keeps a megastar in the title picture. There. Yeah. And Bianca's still in the title picture because, and if Seth wins, you know, I mean, that's too soon for WrestleMania, obviously,
but
that would be a thing where down the line, it makes a lot of sense. So we'll see if they go there. They've never all out acknowledged Bianca and Montez ever. So it'd be nice to have that happen. At the same time, we'll wait and see if they feel they need to, because I see Montez Ford being a great babyface, a great heel. He's just all personality.
Yep.
And nothing worse than a heel that can still impress you with their work, you know, like, it's like, damn, he's that good, you know?
All right. From there, we go to we got a SmackDown breakdown here, an entire recap of the SmackDown Reigns Lesnar angle and the reveal of Seth on SmackDown to lead to the Seth promo tonight. Rollins comes out tonight, no suit this week, just the white furry coat, which seems to be his new thing. He's excited for the Rumble because he is going to become the Universal Champion. He refers to Lesnar and Lashley as nincompoops. If anything takes me out of a championship promo, yeah, that's where it took us to. Nincompoops. Big E interrupts, says he's put $10 on Rollins to get the win. He's entering the Royal Rumble, and his goal is to defeat Rollins at WrestleMania. Rollins laughed it off, but then Big E goaded him into a match tonight where Jimmy Smith actually says, for whatever reason, Rollins has agreed to this match tonight. Which he did, and they did Big E versus Seth for nearly 20 minutes. Seth got the clean win with the curb stomp. This is after Big E had issued the challenge. Let's go back to that, which is weird. I'm not sure what this says about how done they are with Big E, because they also pulled the title off him, but it just seems like a way that they had to make Seth look strong and believable going into the Roman match, I guess.
Yeah, and that was kind of sad to watch as a Big E fan. Anybody that's been a fan of Big E as champion, you know, it was a message sent, obviously, but I don't think they're done with Big E in that scene yet. I just think that it's probably going to be a mid-year post-Mania run again if he gets another shot in there, because we're in that time of year where the biggest of the big names are in there. And again, nothing against Big E. Fans know him, fans love him, but not everybody knows who Big E is. And that's who they're going for going into Mania. They want the names that people really recognize and know in that top spot.
They review the Women of the Rumble, which we reviewed earlier. They show the photo, though. Did you notice the photo and what it looks like now? Because it's all the women and then Charlotte in front. And Charlotte's title, as it is held, is over Mickie James.
Oh, my gosh.
It was insane. Oh. It was right over. So Mickie is just kind of like, her face is just popping over top of the title, but Charlotte's arm is like blocking Mickie James.
Yeah, well, that's something for us to read into. That I almost think that was deliberately done just for people like us to nitpick over. But yeah, then again, I mean, she's right close to Charlotte, so it's still the Impact Women's Champion right next to Charlotte.
Well, she was supposed to be in the middle. Like, it. This is This is this was so bad. I don't even know if it was intentional. Like, you can read it to and think it is, but they positioned Mickey in the middle of the former graphic and they just put Charlotte over top of the former graphic and it covered a whole bunch of Mickey. It was hilarious.
I will say this. There is a few problems with their Photoshop department there, because there were a couple of headshots too in that original graphic that are clearly just like upper body, you know, your close shot that they just cropped and tried to make fit with everybody else. Like heads are bigger. Like, I don't know if they've said, you know what, let the intern do this one, but it's, it's kind of looking that way.
Well, later in the show, I think the intern got a hold of the director's chair, or maybe it was the wrestler's fault, but we'll talk about that in a bit. I think the intern may have also written this next segment. For no reason, we have an in-ring interview with Sarah is in there, and then Nikki and Rhea come out to the ring. Sarah introduces them as one of the most, quote, unexpected stories of 2021. Nikki then challenges Zelina and Carmella. Rhea says that wasn't the plan coming out here. We were going to talk about the Rumble. Sarah says they're not on the same page. Is their team done? Probing Sarah, the journalist out there. Yeah, Nikki interrupts Rhea trying to answer and says no. Rhea doesn't want to talk about it out there. Nikki says they're going to talk about it. I'm saying things this way because this is how I felt the promo read on TV. The camera, after Nikki says they're going to talk about it, the camera then stays on a close-up of Rhea, awkwardly. And I know what's happening here because I've watched wrestling for so long. Like, Nikki is going to get a microphone, but they don't cut to her going. They just leave the shot on Rhea, which is so weird. Nikki has the mic then and says, the team brought out the best in them both. I'm sorry. What? Because it hasn't. Nikki accuses Rhea of thinking she's better than her. Nikki says she was the one doing her the favor of staying together and that she is better in the ring than Rhea. Rhea says she's leaving. Then Nikki says, Nikki is making her feel uncomfortable. This is so bad. Rhea then offers her hand as a way of saying goodbye. Nikki won't shake Rhea's hand without her looking Nikki in the eye and telling her that she still believes in her. Rhea says she does believe in her. She loves Nikki, thinks she's a superhero, and Rhea still wants to be friends. They hug, and then as they go for a fist bump, Nikki knocks down Rhea and beats on her a little bit. As she walks up the ramp, she yells, "Almost superheroes don't need any friends."
Before the fist bump, Nikki awkwardly took to the ropes, Matt Hardy style, and went for a pop from the crowd, which, I mean, and here's the thing. Like, I love Nikki Cross. I actually got behind the superhero thing when it first started because I was like, great, this is a Hurricane character. This is something kids will love. This will be something, you know, the merch is there. It all made sense to me in that weird way. But It did turn into a pathetic, sad display. And I honestly expected Rhea to be the one to pop her when she came back down. So, I mean, getting the double fists, you know, like I'm talking about before the promo. Like, I always thought Rhea was going to be the one to turn and destroy Nikki. I think a lot of us thought that. But yeah, once that promo happened, I was like, they're turning Nikki. Oh, no. And yeah, that double fist at the end was something. But yeah, I don't know. I may the almost a superhero rest in peace, and maybe we get Sanity Nikki back. I don't know.
That was her best character. Character was tremendous.
Don't get me wrong. This is her best gear.
She played it so well.
If she can combine this gear with that character.
maybe. Reggie and Dana are next. They're backstage, and Reggie got them cheese steaks. Reggie tries to get them out of there because he has a sixth sense when the 24/7 title is in jeopardy. Truth is there pushing a large garbage can. Tozawa is in the garbage can. They then throw cheese, or Reggie and Dana throw cheese steaks at these two, clearly overshooting them, which hits Tamina, who is off camera. And then there's the reveal of her covered in cheese steaks. Tamina pushes over the garbage can. Dana and Reggie run away. Mike, by the way, on the other side of the Zoom right now, has his hands over his face at how
double face palm.
I mean, we kind of thought this was over, and then they cut to almost walking down the hallway. I will say this. I enjoyed the fact that it wasn't actually over. And instead, as Almost is walking too, and they're like Almost coming up next, all of a sudden, Dana and Reggie run straight into Almost, and Reggie falls, and then Almost picks up Reggie. Dana's just yelling, put him down, put him down, put him down. He puts him down. He picks him back up again. Then he tells Reggie, watch what I do tonight, because next week I'm going to do worse. Yeah. They didn't explain what any of this was. Also, I had to rewind in order to understand what Almost was saying here. What I'm gathering after seeing Almost versus Nick Sanders later, the very James Ellsworth-like individual, and seeing Reggie staring at him on the screen. So this week, Almost beats a jobber. Next week, Almost is in the ring with Reggie.
Next week, Reggie becomes a jobber. Yeah.
So, but they did not explain this at all here. It was very confusing.
Can we just go back to the cheesesteaks thing first of all? Happy birthday, Tamina. It was her birthday yesterday as she
That's nice.
Got covered in Cheese Whiz. But the obvious planting of, by the way, we're in Philadelphia, always gets me. Even the Seth promo earlier, what's a gritty? Oh my gosh, we're in Philadelphia. Going back to the destruction of Reggie, here you've got Omos who's basically being pushed as a bully, which they did with Braun, and it worked. Right. Do we got to do that, though? I mean, if we're trying to sell this guy as an Andre, why is he beating Nick Sanders, or as I have him in my notes, Splat? You know, you just name these guys Splat because that's what happens to them. I guess it's filling time. I guess it's giving him time to build and get experience when they're on the road or something like that, I guess. Because why else would
I don't know what this was. I mean, keep in mind, last week he beat AJ Styles.
Yeah.
We're going backwards here.
Yeah. That's what I think, though. That's why I think they're filling time. They're trying to stretch this out till somebody big comes along and takes him out at Mania, or loses to him at Mania. And I think this is setting up for him versus Priest down the line. Because that's the only guy you can have. I think you have Omos win that one. You have to.
Almost be Priest.
Yeah.
No, those are two guys that should both be winning. I mean, Almost should not be winning, but they love him because he's tall.
But Priest doesn't let his Damian side out enough. Okay. And so when we get the rematch, see, again, here, you're not the only one that likes a fantasy book, Jason Agnew. I'm just a lot worse at it than you are.
hey, earlier in this show, you brought up Drew Carey and how he was in the Royal Rumble, right? And that's very fitting because this next promo, we see Mimi from the Drew Carey show. There is either Mimi or a drag queen, one of the two, because that's how the makeup of Doudrop is now being done. Close-up backstage promo. Did you not? I was just blown away by this eye makeup here and doing with this poor woman.
Shut up, pig.
This is so bad. She is Doudrop's promo here. She's going to win tonight, and 2022 will be the year Becky will finally get Doudropped. It's terribly written. She's poorly stylized. I just feel bad for this woman who is out there on WWE TV, and this could have been great. This Piper Niven could have been great.
Well, and a few weeks ago, if you remember, the story came out that they've trademarked the name Piper Niven.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
So why? Are we going to finally get this Doudrop dropped? I mean, Dolph Ziggler has been Dolph Ziggler forever now, and I never thought that name would last as long as it did and even get a world championship attached to it. That seems to be the missing link in all this thing, is sticking with this name Doudrop and the music and the entrance and everything.
Everything. She's just a mess.
It doesn't line up with the character they're building. This should be a destroyer. This should be a character. Like, this should be what Nia Jax was supposed to be.
Sure.
What Nia Jax was lined to be until Nia Jax actually just came out and wasn't good. all the parts are there. She can work. She can talk when not given crap lines.
Given garbage. Yeah.
Everything's there. So maybe they're just waiting to pull the trigger on it. But I did like the follow-up to that later on in the show. So we'll get there.
All right. So we talked about the almost thing, beating Nick Sanders. Cool. And then we cut to Reggie and Dana in the back, right? Because almost versus Reggie seems to be where they're headed next week, which is, again, weird because that puts almost in the mix of the 24/7 geeks, which is bad. Unless almost is going to destroy Reggie and then he's going to, oh, no, Reggie doesn't have the title. It's Dana that has the title.
Yeah. I mean, the other ones could come out, though, and he could just wipe all them out. And then that gives Dana the chance to escape again. I don't care.
Still bad. Still, if you're pushing almost, even though I'm not in favor of that, it should still, he should be nowhere near these guys. All right. The cutting edge is next. Edge is out. I hated this segment. I hate everything about this feud. There's no need for it. So it's Beth Phoenix is Edge's guest, the owner of Thighs That Can Crack a Coconut.
That made me laugh.
Yeah, that made me. Reminds. Then we get into more of the Broad Street Bullies reference that says Beth is as tough as Dave Schultz. The audience falls flat here. It's just too long ago. They have more championships than Miz and Maryse. They're the only couple in the Hall of Fame. We get a full Beth Phoenix vignette to remind fans of who she is and what she's done. Beth then thinks Edge is trying to butter her up for later tonight, but flattery will get him everywhere. Beth,
pause on that line right there. Yeah. Am I the only one that turned into a 12-year-old when I heard that line? Just why, when she says mean? It, flattery will get you everywhere. Oh, wink. I'm just like, really?
I didn't get
really?
It. Like, they're married. Like, whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know.
You guys also have kids. This shouldn't be a big deal.
Yeah, but there's still a forbidden door.
Oh, boy.
I apologize for nothing. I'm still owning that joke. I don't care.
Yeah. Beth then refers to Miz and Maryse as having a verbal diarrhea, which is kind of amusing considering the segment we're watching. Miz and Maryse interrupt. Miz refers to the crowd as Filthy Delphia, makes a Ben Simmons reference. That one hits with the audience much better than the Broad Street Bullies. Miz then throws to a Maryse video, which is explaining who she is. They then threaten Maryse because Beth is badass. Miz tries to hype Maryse, but she walks off without him. The crowd laughs. Beth then threatens Miz as well. So that's the build here. The build is in that tag match, and Beth is going to manhandle Miz.
Do you almost see this being a case where Maryse doesn't even show up at the match? Because when she walked off, I took that as, oh, crap, she's right. I'm going to get killed.
Nah, I think she's going to be there. She'll show up. Maybe she won't do much in the ring. Probably not. I mean, she's not capable of doing all that much anyway. She was never a great in-ring worker. But yeah, the big spot will just be Beth glam slamming Miz, I guess.
Oh,
for
yeah.
The finish. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We move along to Austin Theory in the back. Kevin Patrick shows up. He's got AJ Styles tonight. Austin has the chance to impress Mr. McMahon. Tonight, AJ is a future Hall of Famer, but tonight he will beat him, and Mr. McMahon will have no doubt to continue into investing into Austin Theory. But McMahon not on tonight's show, suspiciously.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that, but don't really need him. At this point, what is he offering other than the eraser? Pencils.
Yeah, it's a shadow or a shell of what he used to be.
My egg.
AJ Styles versus Austin Theory. They wrestled for a bit, but the match ended in disqualification after Grayson Waller attacked Styles as he set up for the phenomenal forearm. Theory took a selfie over Styles before leaving, and then AJ beat up Waller a bit before Waller scampered away. So Boris and Matt will have the coverage of this match tomorrow on NXT Talk because they used Raw to promo NXT essentially here.
Finally, it's too bad they didn't do that when they were actually in a battle against another company. But
yeah,
I mean, this is kind of neat. I'm liking this AJ style who's mixing in with the young guys. Clearly he's doing this for a purpose, and that is to try and help build some new stars as best as AJ Styles can, you know, between Omos and now you've got Grayson Waller in NXT, who there's clearly some money in somewhere. Maybe they bring him to Raw to put up with Theory for a while, you know, have that be a unit. Could be a thing, but
didn't see any hints of it tonight.
Well, yet. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these factions sometimes start out of nothing, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think it would hurt. I don't think it would hurt if you know, Waller costs AJ a match against Austin, and this is after AJ beats Waller, I'm presuming, in NXT, because Riddle went down there and you know, gave the rub, so to speak, but still pinned the opponents there. So I don't see anything wrong with this. I just wish it had happened like a year ago.
We then get some wacky production here where they cut to the back, and this is the curtains where the guys go out to the ring. I guess they're waiting for Waller to come through here, but no one's there. They awkwardly cut back to Styles leaving the ring, and clearly the cameras at this point are just being told to follow the puck, follow AJ. The refs are running around. One's leaving. One's going to the ring. We see all of this happen, and then they then cut back to the spot earlier, and Grayson Waller's there already with Kevin Patrick. So just real discombobulated bit of production here. He says on NXT, the Phenomenal One will be taken over by the Grayson Waller effect. Not very catchy. And that's kind of where they leave it here. So that's what we'll see on NXT this week.
The Grayson Waller effect, they're going for that whole social media thing, right? So
what, the Grayson Waller? Why? Is that what he's doing on social media? I haven't
followed. Yeah. Yeah. That's basically his tagline. Again, not catchy, but that's what they're going for.
Okay. So there's a Liv Morgan promo. She's going to win tonight and win at the Royal Rumble. Okay. then we get Becky Lynch's entrance. Her glittery Aladdin-style pants match her hair tonight. We think we're going to see Becky here, but we don't. She goes to the ring, we come back, and we go to Alexa Bliss in a psychiatrist's office. So we have the question answered. Is Alexa going to drop the crazy character, the character with the bells and whistles and the magic? The answer is no.
Was Jason Agnew's present to Baby Andrade still relevant? That's the real question here.
It is. Lily is referenced. So Alexa is able to stop the Newton's Cradle, aka kinetic balls, that are sitting on the psychiatrist's desk with her mind. So then she's in the same makeup. Was it Dr. Schlabel? Is that what this doctor was? Because they normally they normally throw a reference in when they do this.
I missed the name. I did hear him say it, but it was was this guy French Canadian, or is he's got a bit of an accent in his voice, I thought. So
I
don't know who this guy is. He's clearly a worker from somewhere. Like he's clearly a wrestler. He's not an actor. At least not a very good one. This whole thing, I was actually more focused on going to WWE shop and seeing if the Lily doll was still there, which, by the way, your first birthday present for Baby Andrade can totally be the Charlie doll, which is on clearance if you're so interested. If you want to get the follow-up, remember the Charlotte Flair doll that she made? Charlie?
You can buy
the Charlie doll. Yeah. Dude, you can buy everything. It's WWE. But yeah, so that's all I could think about was, okay, we're still doing this. We're still doing this.
They had the opportunity to leave it here, and they did. I'm actually very surprised. I thought that she would come back probably still as a heel. She's good at being a heel, but I didn't expect the magic, the Bray Wyatt-style character. I thought the reason of getting rid of her for a while was to drop that. And I think, unfortunately, she's back because I don't really think this plays well for her. People are over it. People were never into it.
No. And especially when Wyatt got released.
Yeah.
And it was like, you're not, you know, the We Want Wyatt chants were coming out. That there's a possibility for a Rumble appearance. Yeah. You think?
Because
he's doing stuff on social right now as the Fiend. He's saying, but he's also calling himself Wyndham and saying things like, they don't own me, which also tells me, okay, he's got creative license over the Fiend character, which surprises me. But yeah, I never say never, but again, it would make no sense. He would just come in and get tossed over the rope. So yeah. That's...
Well, unless it's a re-signing, unless they see all the COVID misses and they need to put some bodies in there, like back into the mix.
He'd have to win though. He'd have to win.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't win.
Well, you figure that, well, you guys were talking about it on Sunday. You figure the winner is Lesnar after Lesnar loses.
One of the two has to. If somebody drops the title, then yeah, it's either Lesnar or Roman.
All right. The whole Alexa thing, they show her tape of the final appearance with Lily being ripped apart by Charlotte. He asks, the doctor asks how it makes her feel. She overpours a glass of water and then trashes the office. We're going to see these for weeks. I'm not even sure if we're going to see Alexa in the Rumble. Like, is this a build 3 weeks for Rumble? Because it feels like something that could go on forever.
They need her. They need her in there. They literally need the body.
But don't you think if she is in there that she should win?
Yeah. Which is why it won't happen, but they need her. Okay. Right. Unless she comes out and challenges the winner or has some dominant storyline the Monday after. Because, yeah, why are you spending all this time building her back? It's not like they're bringing in a new character that would just come in and start a feud. We're talking about Alexa Bliss, one of the most popular women on the roster in the last 10 years. Why not put her in a dominant spot? But to have her come back as this character again, it's just what a waste. Yeah. What a waste.
So Becky is still standing in the ring, by the way. And as long as we've talked about it, that's probably about as long as it was on Raw. 9 minutes. I always like to rewind when they do this every week for this main event spot where they put someone in the ring and just make them wait. And they did it. 9 minutes of Becky standing in the ring from the beginning of her entrance to when we finally hear her speak. She does what she always does. She runs down all of her potential opponents. She says tonight's winner is going to lose regardless of who it is.
Nine minutes of fans getting to bask in the awesomeness of that jacket.
I didn't notice the
jacket.
I noticed the pants. The pants are so overwhelming for me. That matched her hair.
The pants are great. The whole thing is great. I'm buying in on big time Becks more and more every week, but the jacket with the little stuffed goats on the shoulders.
I didn't even notice that. No,
like the Bret Hart style flair, except they're little stuffed goats. And then she's got the goat fur goat on the back. Like, I'm just dead. Just dead. I love it.
So it's our main event tonight. It's the triple threat match, Sudden Death, which they had pushed over and over again. Bianca, Liv, and Doudrop. So Becky stays at ringside on commentary and eventually gets involved in the match to no one's surprise. But it's a triple threat, so there's no DQ. And she, of course, gets involved when Belair's trying to make a pin. And then Belair chases Becky to the outside, to which Becky ends up tossing her over the announce table. Doudrop, while that's happening, pins Liv. So I would say, rather surprisingly, that Doudrop is the one getting the shot at the Rumble. Becky goes into the ring, offers a handshake, and then slaps Doudrop in the face, goes for the man slam, aka rock bottom, but can't make that work. Doudrop pushes her away into the ropes. She bails out of the ring, and then they yell at each other as they go off the air, so much like Reigns and Rollins, where you don't have a baby face. Mm-hmm. In this as well, you have Lynch and Doudrop. Both of them have been pushed as heels.
I did like the line, "You messed up big time," that came from Doudrop right at the end there. She's looking at Becky, you know, playing off of the big time Bex
name. Big time Bex, yeah.
But you messed up big time. I think this could be a potential where they could they turn Doudrop? Could they turn her and this becomes the Piper Niven thing? Because that's the only thing that makes sense to me. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. Or even if they turn her and turn her into more of a badass baby face. At the same time, yeah, Becky's still in this gray area because people still love her. And they still show signs of people loving her.
Yep.
So is Becky the baby face in this? I just don't know. I don't know for the life of me who the winner is in this because or who the baby face in this. I mean, I think I'm pretty sure I know who the winner is, but I don't see Doudrop winning the match, but I do see her having some sort of transition over the next few weeks here.
Well, Andrade's theory for Becky is that she came back and wanted to be the heel because she's fully aware that WWE doesn't know how to book babyfaces. So even though she designed herself as the heel, that actually makes her the babyface because she is booked stronger by being the heel, if that makes any sense.
That does. That actually does kind of make sense. Because if you're a babyface in WWE, you're getting suffering succotash. If yes. if you're a heel, you know, she's going for that Conor McGregor angle where yes. where Conor has a lot of haters, but Conor has a lot of lovers too. You know, mm-hmm. people either love or hate that guy, and the ones that love him, love him. And I think the ones that love Becky are gonna love Becky no matter what. The fan side of me is always gonna cheer Becky Lynch. I don't care what she does. She can come out and tell us all we smell like shit. I don't care. It's awesome. Yeah, we do. Yay. But I just don't see her ever being a full heel. You're never going to be someone that people just boo mercilessly back because you're just not that person.
I think part of the issue here with this particular match. So a couple of things. Number one, it's at the Rumble, so it doesn't matter because the focus of the Rumble is the Rumble. Actually, this is a shockingly, because you've put Lashley and Lesnar on this card, that is actually not a match that is needed for the Rumble. The Rumble sells the Rumble upon itself. And this is a placeholder. Ultimately, they don't even need to do a women's match on the Rumble. But Doudrop here becomes a placeholder. Part of the problem with the Doudrop character, though, is it's confused. It's just so, so confused, as we talked about earlier. So I don't think, unless they can do something in the match to rally the crowd around Doudrop, I don't foresee her getting any cheers or any crowd behind her. I don't exactly know how to make that work.
Yeah, there's either a transition there or Becky is a cool heel.
Yeah, which is death for the babyface. Absolute death.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no coming back from that. So maybe the transition for Doudrop happens after this match. Maybe there's a change there. There's got to be something. There's got to be some big change that turns her into that powerful threat because the current version, like you said, is very confused. I would argue that the Becky character is a little confused too because she talks tough. She fights tough, but then she does chicken shit heel stuff. So there's a clear lack of direction. I don't know who's producing a lot of the women's division writing, so like the matches are totally separate. Like it's when you got people like TJ and stuff doing that, but yeah. I don't know who's in charge of the storylines for the women, but there's got to be some straightening out done for sure.
All right. Well, listen, we'll follow that along next week. And when I say we, I don't mean Mike and I, because Mike and I will not be here next Tuesday morning for Tuesday Morning Cooked. Boris and Andrada will be taking care of the show next week for you. And this is Mike's, of course, got the Sunday night's main event for you with Boris. Again, I'm guessing your insider ear to the ground.
Yeah. You know, Boris is kind of falling into that role here because he is the guy that's all over the forum. He's in touch with everybody. And if you're a patron, you got a message last night talking about a new feature that we want to bring in some patrons on. We've already got a ton of responses. So looking forward to bringing that out in the next few weeks as well. So things are definitely happening again. I appreciate the opportunity and everybody's been super cool. So thank you most importantly for that. And thank you to everybody who's tolerating the new guy right now. I know we're wrestling fans and we fear change, but it's something where it's been a ton of fun getting to know a lot of the SNME radio family, people listening and tuning in. And it's just going to be more fun from here. So get ready. We're going to have another Rocket Buster show for you on Sunday.
Bye, guys. So there you have it. That podcast can be delivered to you each and every week right into your inbox, along with all of our other podcasts from Sunday night's main event. We're not just on Sunday nights. We're on each and every day, and you can listen on demand. And along with our wrestling podcast, we also add in a weekly 3-hour trivia show that I host on terrestrial radio across Canada. And we also add in Dan the Mouth Lavransky. Well, he loves two things in life. One is wrestling and the other is music. So we have Dr. Mouth's Rock and Roll Lunch Party for you each and every week as well. Because you know what, guys? There's more to life than wrestling. For all of these podcasts, sign up at patreon.com/snmeradio. Only $1 a week. Hey, it's a pretty good deal. patreon.com/snmeradio. Don't you dare miss it.